The Falcon landed a few minutes ahead of schedule and taxied to the private hangar. The senior customs and immigration officials who were awaiting for them were old acquaintances who were always on hand when the Falcon carried a special cargo. After they had completed the formalities, they drank a schnapps with Gotthold von Schiller at the Falcon's tiny fitted bar and discreetly pocketed the envelopes that lay on the bar counter beside each crystal glass. The drive up into the mountains took most of the rest of the night. Von Schiller's chauffeur followed the covered Pegasus truck along the icy, winding mountain road, never letting it and its cargo out of sight. At 5 in the morning, they drove through the stone gate of the Schloss, where the snow lay half a metre deep in the deer park. The castle itself, with its dark stone battlements and arrow-slit windows, looked like something from Bram Stoker's novel. However, even at this hour, the butler and all his staff were on hand to welcome the master. Herr Rieper, the custodian of von Schiller's collection, and his most trusted assistants were also waiting, ready to move the two wooden cases down into the vault. Reverently, they loaded them onto the forklift and rode down with them in the specially installed elevator. While they unpacked the crates, von Schiller returned to his suite in the North Tower. He bathed and ate a light breakfast, prepared by the Chinese chef. When he had eaten, he went to his wife's bedroom. She was even frailer than she had been when last he had seen her. Her hair was now completely white, her face pinched and waxy. He sent the nurse away and kissed his wife's forehead tenderly. The cancer was eating her away slowly, but she was the mother of his two sons, and in his own peculiar way he still loved her. He spent an hour with her, and then went to his own bedroom and slept for 4 hours. At his age, he never needed more sleep than that, no matter how tired he might be. He worked until mid-afternoon with Jutta and 2 other secretaries, and then the custodian called on the house intercom to tell him that they were ready for him in the vault. Von Schiller and Jutta rode down together in the elevator, and when the doors slid open, both Herr Rieper and Nahut were waiting for them. One look at their faces told von Schiller that they were beside themselves with excitement, bubbling over with news for him. "Are the X-rays completed?" von Schiller demanded, as they hurried after him down the subterranean passageway to the vault. "The technicians have completed their work," Rieper told him. "They have done a fine job. The plates are wonderful. Ja, wunderbar." Von Schiller had endowed the clinic, so any request of his was treated as a royal command. The director had sent down his most modern portable X-ray equipment and 2 technicians to photograph the mummy of Lord Harab, and a senior radiologist to interpret the plates. Rieper inserted his plastic pass card into the lock of the steel vault door, and with a soft pneumatic hiss it slid open. They all stood aside for von Schiller to enter first. He paused in the doorway and looked around the great vault. The pleasure never palled. On the contrary, it seemed to grow more intense every time he entered this place. The walls were enclosed in 2 metres of steel and concrete, and were guarded by every electronic device that genius could devise. But this was not apparent when he viewed the softly lit and elegantly appointed main display room. It had been planned and decorated by one of Europe's foremost interior designers. The theme colour was blue. Each item of the collection was housed in its own case, and each of these was cunningly arranged to show it to its best advantage. Everywhere was the soft glimmer of gold and precious gems nestling on midnight blue velvet cushions. Artfully concealed spotlights illuminated the lustre of lovingly polished alabaster and stone. The glow of ivory and obsidian. There were marvellous statues. The pantheon of the old gods were here assembled. Thoth and Anubis, Hapi and Seth, and the glorious trinity of Osiris and Isis and Horus, the sun. They gazed out with those inscrutable eyes which had looked upon the procession of the ages. On its temporary plinth in the centre of the room, in pride of place, stood the latest addition to this extraordinary hoard, the tall, graceful stone testament of Taita. Von Schiller stopped beside it to caress the polished stone before he passed on into the second room. Here the coffin of Tanus, Lord Harab, lay across a pair of trestles. A white-coated radiologist hovered over her backlit display board on which the X-ray plates were clipped. Von Schiller went directly to the display and peered at the shadowy pictures upon it. Within the outline of the wooden coffin, the reclining human shape with hands crossed over its chest was very clear. It reminded him of a carved effigy atop the sarcophagus of an old knight in the precincts of a medieval cathedral. "What can you tell me about this body?" he asked the radiologist without looking at her. "Male," she said crisply, "late middle age, over 50 and under 65 at death. Short stature." All the listeners winced and glanced at von Schiller. He seemed not to have noticed this solecism. "Five teeth are missing, one front upper, one eye tooth and three molars. Wisdom teeth impacted, extensive caries in most surviving teeth. Evidence of chronic bilharzia infection, a possible poliomyelitis in infancy, withering in left leg." She recited her findings for 5 minutes and then ended. "Probable cause of death was a puncture wound in the upper right thorax, lance or arrow. Extrapolating from the entry angle, the head of the lance or arrow would have transfixed the right lung." "Anything else?" von Schiller asked when she fell silent. The radiologist hesitated and then went on. "Herr von Schiller, you will recall that I have examined several mummies for you. In this instance, the incisions through which the viscera were removed appear to have been made with more skill and finesse than those of the other cadavers. The operators seem to have been a trained physician." "Thank you," von Schiller turned from her to Nahut. "Do you have any comments at this stage?" "Only that these descriptions do not fit those given in the seventh scroll for Tanus, Lord Harab, at the time of his death."
"In what way?"
"Tanus was a tall man, much younger. See the portraits on the coffin lid?"
"Go on," von Schiller invited.
Nahut stepped up to the display of X-ray plates and pointed out several solid dark objects, all of them with clean outlines, that adorned the body. "Jewelry," he said. "Amulets, bracelets, pectorals, several necklaces, rings and earrings, but most significant," Nahut touched the dark circle around the dead brow, "the uraeus crown. The outline of the sacred serpent is quite unmistakable beneath the bandages."
"What does that indicate?" von Schiller was puzzled.
"This was not the body of a commoner or even of a noble. The extent of ornamentation is too extensive. But most significant, the uraeus crown, the sacred cobra, that was only worn by royalty. I believe that we have here a royal mummy."
"Impossible," snapped von Schiller. "Look at the inscription on the coffin. Those that were painted on the walls of the tomb. Clearly, this is the mummy of an Egyptian general."
"With respect, Herr von Schiller, there is a possible explanation. In the book written by the Englishman, River God, there is an interesting suggestion that the slave Taita swapped the two mummies, that of Pharaoh Mamose and his good friend Tanus."
"But for what earthly reason would he do that?"
von Schiller looked incredulous. "Not for any earthly reason, but for a spiritual and supernatural reason. Taita wished his friend to have the use and ownership of all Pharaoh's treasure in the afterworld. It was his last gift to a friend."
"Do you believe this?"
"I do not disbelieve it. There is one other fact that tends to support this theory. It is quite obvious from the X-rays that the coffin is too large for the body within. To me it seems obvious that it was designed to accommodate a larger man. Yes, Herr von Schiller, I do believe that there is an excellent chance that this is a royal mummy."
Von Schiller had gone ashen pale as he listened. Sweat beaded upon his forehead, and his voice was hoarse and chesty as he asked, "A royal mummy?"
"It may very well be so."
Slowly von Schiller moved closer to the sealed coffin on its trestle, until he was staring down at the portrait of the dead man upon its lid. "The golden uraeus of Mamose, the personal jewelry of a pharaoh."
His hand was shaking as he laid it on the coffin lid.
If that is so, then this find exceeds our most extravagant hopes.
Von Schiller drew a deep, steadying breath.
Open the coffin. Unwrap the mummy of the Pharaoh Mamos.
It was painstaking work. Nahut had performed the same task many times before, yet never on the earthly remains of such an illustrious personage as an Egyptian pharaoh. Nahut first had to establish where the joint of the lid lay beneath the paint. Once he had done this, he could whittle away at the ancient varnish and glues that secured the lid in place. Great care had to be taken to inflict as little damage as possible. The fragile coffin in itself was a priceless treasure. This work took the greater part of 2 days. When the lid was free and ready to be lifted, Nahut sent a message to Von Schiller, who was in an executive meeting with his sons and the other directors of his company in the library upstairs. Von Schiller had refused to go into the city for this meeting. He could not bear to be separated from his latest treasure. Immediately he heard from Nahut, he adjourned the meeting until the following Monday, and dismissed his directors and his offspring unceremoniously. Then, without waiting to see them into their waiting limousines, he hurried down to the vaults. Nahut and Reaper had rigged a light scaffold over the coffin, from which hung 2 sets of block and tackle. As soon as Von Schiller entered the vault, Reaper sent away his assistants. Only the 3 of them would be present to witness the opening of the coffin. Reaper brought him the carpet-covered block for him to stand on and positioned it at the head of the coffin so that Von Schiller would be able to see inside as they worked. From this eminence, the old man nodded to them to proceed. The ratchets of the 2 blocks clicked, 1 pawl at a time, and both Reaper and Nahut gently put pressure on the tackle. There was a faint crackling and tearing sound, at which Von Schiller winced.
"It is only the last shreds of glue holding the lid," Nahut reassured him.
"Go on," Von Schiller ordered, and they lifted the lid another 6 inches until it hung suspended over the body of the coffin. The scaffolding was on nylon casters, which rolled smoothly over the tiled floor. They wheeled away the entire structure, with the coffin lid still suspended from it. Von Schiller peered into the open coffin. His expression changed to one of astonishment. He had expected to see the neatly swathed human form lying serenely in the traditional funereal pose. Instead, the interior of the coffin was stuffed untidily with loose linen bandages that entirely hid the body from view.
"What on earth?"
Von Schiller exclaimed with astonishment. He reached out to take a handful of the old discoloured wrappings, but Nahut stopped him.
"No! No, no, don't touch it!"
he cried out excitedly, and then was immediately apologetic.
Forgive me, Herr von Schiller, but this is fascinating. It strongly supports the theory of an exchange of bodies. I think we should study it before we proceed with the unwrapping.
With your permission, of course, Herr von Schiller." Von Schiller hesitated. He was anxious to discover what lay beneath this rat's nest of old rags, but he realized the virtue of caution and prudence now. A hasty move might do irreparable damage. He straightened up and stepped down from his block.
"Very well," he grunted.
He pulled a handkerchief from the breast pocket of his dark blue double-breasted suit jacket and mopped the heavy sweat from his face. His voice was shaky as he asked,
"Is it possible? Could this be Mamos himself?"
Stuffing the handkerchief back into his trouser pocket, he discovered with mild surprise that he had a painful erection. With his hand in his pocket, he rearranged it to lie flat against his stomach.
"Remove the loose wrappings."
With your permission, Herr von Schiller, we should take the photographs first," Reaper suggested tactfully.
"Of course," von Schiller agreed at once. "They are scientists, archaeologists, not common looters. Take the photographs."
They worked slowly, and Von Schiller found the delay tantalizing.
There was no sense of the passage of time down here in the vault, but at one stage von Schiller, now in his shirt sleeves, glanced at his gold wristwatch and was surprised to see that it was past 9 o'clock at night. He unknotted his necktie, threw it on the bench where his jacket already lay, and reapplied himself to the task. Gradually the shape of a human body emerged from under the compacted mass of ancient bindings. But it was after midnight when at last Nahut teased away the last untidy clump of old cloth from the mummy's torso. They blinked at the glimpse of gold just visible through the neat layers of bandages laid upon the corpse by the meticulous and skilful hands of the embalmers.